All right, so thank you very much for the invitation to come here. So the title of my talk is Columb-Locating Proximitized Nanowires, and here's my outline. So I'll talk about first thermodynamics in charging effect in these proximitized nanowires, and then I'll discuss transport properties, and at the end of my talk I'll focus on some future directions where we lay out how to use these systems for quantum information processing. Okay, and the details are outlined in these works. Also, there are some unpublished results. So, okay, so this work is motivated by recent experiments from various groups from Delft, and mostly Delft and Copenhagen groups, where experimentalists fabricated devices consisting of a semiconductor nanowires, and then they managed to put a thin aluminum shell on top of them. And the system essentially, when the barriers over here, which are controlled by these gates, are high, corresponds to a superconducting island in the Columb-Locate regime. So there are also some of the results that I'm going to discuss. They're also applicable to these works, where rather than using conventional tunnel junctions, the experimentalists, they used actually semiconductor nanowire junctions. And I'll point out some of the differences between tunnel junctions and nanowire junctions. And all of this, most of this progress, recent progress, happened due to the, I think, experimental breakthrough coming from Peter Krogstrup, Charlie Marcus's group in Copenhagen, where they managed to grow indium arsenide nanowires, and then they managed to create perfect epitaxial interfaces between these hexagonal shapes, nanowires, and thin shells of superconductors. And so you can see the quality of the interfaces, the remarkable quality of the interfaces over here. So, okay, so, yeah, so conventional superconducting circuits are built of tunnel, metallic tunnel junctions. So these tunnel junction consists of some a metal oxide metal, and most importantly, they have typically very large number of channels of the order of 1,000 or more. And so, whereas semiconductor nanowire junctions, which I mostly focus today, they consist of a single channel or a few channels, nanowires with arbitrary transparency, and the transparency can be controlled by the electrostatics, by electrostatic gates. So very often one would want to increase Josephson energy and make it appreciable. That means that the normalized normal state conductance should be of the order of E squared of H. And in the case of normal state metallic junctions, that's okay, and you can still do perturbation theory because the higher order corrections in perturbation theory scales as 1 over number of channels. Number of channels is a huge number. So therefore, it's well defined even when conductance is of the order of E squared over H. Whereas in the case of a semiconductor nanowire, that's not, perturbation theory breaks down because essentially number of channels is 1. And therefore, there is need to have a new theory. Okay. So there is another aspect that motivates this work, and it's essentially a combination of mesoscopic physics and topology. So if you take these topological superconductors and you confine them and create mesoscopic structures out of these topological superconductors, then there is new physics coming in which has not been explored before. And so I will talk about some new results in this domain. So here I show a couple of pictures from the recent papers from Copenhagen group, which studied short wires and long wires. So these are devices. This again is semiconductor nanowire. This is a thin aluminum shell. These are the gates that control the barriers and one is driving current across the system and measures two terminal conductance as a function of the gate voltage and also applied magnetic field. So there's another device. This is a picture of the device. So this is a plunger gate that controls this gate voltage. These are the gates that control the barriers over here. These are normal electrodes, and that's the active device. So what you see in this experiment is some interesting data where you see a change of periodicity. So at zero field, there is one periodicity. Then at large fields, there is some other periodicity, and also the interesting evolution in intensities. And I'm going to talk about that today. Okay, let me briefly remind you what happens in the semiconductor nanowires in magnetic field. So essentially, if you have nanowire with Rajba spin-orbit coupling, and if you apply magnetic field along the direction of the nanowire, this magnetic field will open a gap in the spectrum and drive the system into so-called helical regime. And then once you put such a nanowire on top of S-wave superconductor, you'll drive the system into a topological superconducting state. So this can be seen just by looking at the density of states. Here are the picture of the density of states, local density of states, as a function of length of the wire and energy. This is trivial regime. And you can think about this regime as sort of adiabatically connected to an S-wave superconductor. And you see that at zero energy, there is nothing. There is a well-defined gap. Whereas if you drive the system into a topological regime where Zeeman splitting is larger than this combination of the chemical potential and induced gap, then what you find that somewhere at zero energy, and at the opposite ends of the wire, you see these localized Majorana zero modes. And so now we take this non-interacting picture and we add correlation effects on top of that. Okay, well, let's try to understand what happens once we add Coulomb energy. Okay, so this is schematic layout of the system. I'm going to define normal state conductance as small g, and in the weak tunneling limit, g goes to zero. This is the proximatized nanowire, and this is my lead. So first, let's start with non-topological phase. This is the spectrum. So there is a gap, and there is a continuum of states above the gap. Now, if this gap is larger than the charging energy of the island, so this blue color actually corresponds to this blue curve over here, situation over here, then you see that even charged state, which starts at zero gate voltage, basically ground state of the system only has even charge configurations. Now, if I start to apply magnetic field, what happens is that this gap starts to decrease, and eventually we go into this green regime where the effective gap becomes lower than the charging energy, and then the ground state configuration goes from even to odd, even to odd, etc. So the odd region is small. The odd region is small, and the smallness is difference between EC and delta. And finally, once we increase magnetic field larger than this critical value, then we can go into this regime where there is still large gap in the spectrum, but there is a zero energy state. And this zero energy state can, it's a non-local fermionic mode in the system, and this non-local fermionic mode in the system can accept additional electrons. Therefore, there is no difference between orbital energy between even and odd charge states, and therefore you will have a degeneracy, one E periodicity in this case. And this was first pointed out by Liang Fu.
How many is NG number of channels? Is that the number of?
NG is dimensionless gate voltage. It's normalized, it's proportional to this gate, the gate, and it's normalized in dimensionless units. So C gate times V gate, some number. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, so let's move on. So this picture is really a picture when G goes to zero. Now, in real experiments, of course, we want to have some finite g, and we want to understand, we would like to understand what happens when g is non-zero. So let me just go over and review weak tunneling regime, and let me start just from spinful case, which is probably the most known. So as I said, in the spinful case, when delta is larger than EC, there is just even charge. There are only even charge configurations contributing to ground state energy. The only interesting and non-trivial point in this diagram is this point where they meet. Okay, and at that point, you can perform a Schrieffer-Wolf transformation and just project out some high-energy charge states of this Hamiltonian. Sorry, high-energy not charge states, but you can project using this large parameter delta and derives this effective Hamiltonian. So the first term basically is Andreyev, corresponds to conventional Andreyev tunneling. It's a transfer of two E electrons from, you know, from here to here. And the second term is proportional to, you know, normal backscattering. So R is reflection amplitude. And if you stare at this Hamiltonian, you will quickly realize that this actually Hamiltonian corresponding to the Kondo model, single channel Kondo model, where spin up and spin down states are actually playing a role of zero and two states around this at this point. So in the Kondo language, this is going to be just a spin flip operator, and this is just SZ operator.
The Hamiltonian is quadratic. You have only quadratic.
No.
Have SZ after Schrieffer-Wolf.
After Schrieffer-Wolf, I have not quadratic terms because I have S dot S. Just like in Kondo,
okay,
you have a product of spin in the quantum dot times spin in the lead. That's, in my language, not quadratic.
This is more like Anderson Hamiltonian written in the Hubbard operators.
You can also think about this. Yes.
The two term is at the contact or in the first line?
This guy?
First line, very first line, T?
Yeah, it's just tunneling.
Into the contact or?
Yeah, it's tunneling across this.
Is one of those the lead?
Yeah, from here to here.
So those are two different A's, or?
There is A sub P and A sub K. They refer to different subspaces, right and left subspaces.
This N denotes which field of states.
N is the charge in the island.
So that commutes with N.
Which A? A sub K.
Yes.
Yeah, so, okay, so what we know that this problem maps to a charge Kondo problem.
So what about the spin? So it's not two channel, right? It seems like you have
single
two.
Channel.
Yeah.
Single.
So we have the.
So N and N plus two maps to sigma plus.
I understand, but I mean, so we have A sub K and sigma, right? And you have two sigmas. You have, I mean, the electrons have two spins.
Well, there's spin here, but this is just the charge state. So the superconducting island, because has a spin gap, right? So therefore, there is no spin degree of freedom on the island.
Right. I mean, so the fact that you have two flavors, two real spin flavors, does not make it.
No, because you gap it out, and in the superconducting pairs spin up and spin down. So therefore, it gaps out spin in the island. And that's the difference with respect to the normal case, actually. Yes.
I just don't understand. I think the question is about the spin in the leads. That's what I don't understand.
So there's just spin in the lead, and there's spin up and spin down. But I thought the question was a spin in the island.
No.
Is it spin in the lead?
Yeah.
Well, there are two spins in the lead.
Yes, so.
But spin does not play an important role because, you know, the system only flips a charge.
Yeah, but it provides an additional spin in the channel. I mean, I think the point is quite attractive in a regular mountain channel Kondo. Have a spin label which flips the spin in your language to charge, and then there is an extra flavor, right? Could
But in the regular channel two channel condo, this model would correspond to a system where you have a normal island, where you have two charge degeneracy, and also spin degeneracy.
Exactly. Okay. Is that what's happening in the mean?
Yeah, but that's not the relevant degrees of freedom. The relevant degree of freedom is the spin in the island. And spin in the island has only charge degree of freedom. There is no spin degree of freedom. Therefore, the problem maps to a single channel condo rather than two channel condo. There are only allowed processes where you take spin up and backscatter a spin down. So so this process with A dagger A has only spin up and spin down, or spin down to spin up. So there is no process where you have spin up, right? That's just not allowed.
I mean, probably, to really map it onto condo, you would want to make some sort of particle transformation, at least on one spin channel,
yeah.
Right? Because, this way it's this ugly dagger-dagger thing.
That's exactly what you do. You exactly do this transformation, and then it maps to...
So you're saying that still these...
There's a constraint at the boundary, which... couple spin up and spin down. So the boundary condition.
So it can still mix after you.
But it couples spin up with spin down dagger. Maybe I'll explain this later when I have a bosonic version. That's actually pretty obvious what happens in bosonic version. But basically you can think about this. Okay, well, let me just do the following. Let me just do a particle hole transformation, but just for one spin, and take spin down to spin up dagger. And then it maps exactly to a single channel condo problem. So I keep spin up sector the same, and I only do a transformation for spin down sector. See, these terms are invariant under such transformation, but this term becomes exactly as S. Okay? Does it make sense?
I cannot do it in my head, but okay, I trust you.
Okay, any other questions?
So the same transformation is under since my people,
yeah, I'm not saying anything profound here. I'm just saying that this problem maps to a charge condo problem.
To make you
So let's move on. So the scale that is present in this, the characteristic scale is e to the minus pi over j, so EC. This is condo temperature. And then this is the scale that tells you about the smearing around this point. It's how quantum charge fluctuations smear out the discontinuity that was present at G going to zero limit. And so as you calculate reduced charge, which is defined as derivative of dH over dmG, then you'll find that there is just a crossover. And this crossover basically has the characteristic width of this crossover is tk. Okay, so then the next regime that I want to review is when delta is less than EC. And in that regime, we have a green curve over here. So we go from even to odd, even to odd. And one can also perform a calculation and try to understand what the widths of these transitions from different parity states, as well as the width of the shoulder. So the width of the shoulder is proportional to EC minus delta. So when delta is equal to C, it just becomes a point, and we go back to the just even ground state. And also within the second order perturbation theory, it's proportional. You know, you can calculate the width of this region and G squared delta over C.
Sorry, what's
the
important? What is Q?
Q was reduced charge, dH over dmG, as a function of ng. So,
it's like charging energy.
So you're measuring charge on the island as a function of gate voltage. So the charge on the island will have a contribution like this, plus, you know, just proportional to eng. And so you will see steps, basically, if you plot charge of the island but I subtracted this trivial linear slope, and I'm just plotting here the part that really matters and depends on the quantum state of the system. And okay, so I want to get to the most interesting result, and the most interesting result is the case where we have a spinless system, where we've driven the system in a topological regime. And so suppose I give you this system, and it's a black box, and the only information you know that it has one e-periodicity with the gate voltage. And then one may ask, is there a way to distinguish between this Majorana case, which has a state at zero and a gap in the spectrum, and the normal normal metal? Okay. And so the only way to distinguish these two is to look what happens at these points where parity or charge state changes. So in the first case, in the case of Majorana, so I told you that Majorana corresponds to some non-local fermionic mode. So essentially, in the weak tunneling limit, the calculation involves just understanding resonant level coupled to the leads. Okay, and if you solve such a problem, the answer is width of this region is proportional to just conductance, and so effective kind of broadening of this level due to the leads divided by the characteristic charging by charging energy. Whereas in the case of a spinless normal metal with the zero level spacing inside of this superconducting island, what you find is that one again has a mapping to a Kondo problem, but it's a Kondo problem where the spin, effective spin, the role of effective spin plays the charge at 0 and 1. Okay? So it's a spinless problem, and charge 0 and charge 1, once again, at this point, one can derive a similar Hamiltonian as I showed before, except now you're transferring just single electrons. Because it maps to a Kondo problem, we can also write down some characteristic widths of this region, and it's proportional 1 over exponent minus 1 over square root of g. So remember, in the previous case, it was 1 over g because you were transferring Cooper pairs. Here, you're just transferring the electrons, so therefore, the square root of g. And so by measuring, at low temperatures, by measuring the shape of a charge in the island as a function of gate voltage, and by the way, I'm plotting here charge, not reduced charge. I switched between charge and reduced charge, sorry. Then you should be able to distinguish. One should be able to distinguish between the two, especially as you're changing the conductance. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about thermodynamics in the weak coupling regime. And the bottom line is there's a lot of interesting features, but I think this is one of the important results which one can use as a test for the presence of these Majorana zero modes. So now...
So what if there is a trivial Andreev state, there's still a gap, but...
Well, you wouldn't have... Is it at zero or not? If there is a trivial Andreev state at zero, then you would find it similar to Majorana. But trivial Andreev state at zero energy in the spinless case is a Majorana case, I would say. Subclass.
So what is qualitatively the answer to the question you posed? Can you tell the difference? Was it in Majorana or in normal island?
Yeah, so you see the width of this region, this is how sharp will be the transition from charge, say, 0 to 1 mm-hmm. when it's a normal island. Whereas if you have a Majorana island with a discrete level, this width will be much bigger. And it will have a different dependence on conductance. So what you can do, you can just change the conductance and see how these steps smear out. And they will behave in a very different way. So there is a way to distinguish by going to low temperatures and measuring dependence of this width as a function of conductance. Okay.
Typically in experiments, what would be g?
What's that?
So how small is g? lowercase g.
In this calculation, g is assumed to be smaller than 1.
Right. I mean, so you're saying very sharp. I mean, it's a matter of like how small g is, right? I mean, g is order 1. I mean, your blue curve is also going to be fairly small.
Yeah, no, but you can tune g.
Right.
So you can tune it to be, with exponential accuracy, you can raise the barriers and make it, you know, arbitrarily small, close to 0. So that's the point.
So experimentally, is it
that can be done. No, it's experimentally, it's tunable.
So it can be actually a fairly broad transition.
It can be broad, it can be very, very narrow, depends on what you want to measure. So if, you know, nobody has done this experiment yet, but people have done the two-terminal conductance experiment, there you want to open up, because you're driving current through the system, so it's a different experiment, so there you want actually G to be appreciable, closer to 1 than, you know, infinitely small. But the point is, it's tunable in these semiconductor nanowires, so you can change it from 0 to 1. And in this case, you would want to change, you would want to be close to G much smaller than 1 and see the scale independence of the width.
So the width is always going to be, so pi squared is 10, right? So, I mean, the best you can have is e to the minus 5, right?
Yeah, e to the minus 5 is like very sharp. Whereas this is, you know, I think it's possible to distinguish by carefully engineering the parameters. Especially, you can take delta to be larger than EC, and so then you would see also this different scaling on these parameters. Okay, so. Lots of things to cover, so let me move on. Two-terminal conductance, okay? So let's get back to now transport measurements and see what are the signatures. Come back to the Marcus experiment and see what are the signatures in this experiment. What information can we extract from this experiment? So once again, let's look at the source drain voltage versus gate voltage, so this is gate voltage, this is raw data, at different magnetic fields, so B equals 0, B equals 80 millitesla and 220 millitesla. So in the first B equals 0 case, you see at zero bias that there is one periodicity, and that periodicity actually corresponds to 2e, and then eventually you will see that there are some other peaks. So this peak gets split horizontally into two, and then eventually periodicity is changing. So if I plot the cuts along this axis, that these are the three curves, three cuts. So blue is blue, red is this one, and green is this one. So they correspond actually to these three lines, the phase diagram. So let's try to understand this experiment. Yes?
So even the one that you're labeling as e-periodic definitely still is really 2e-periodic, and there's some asymmetry between these peaks. Is that understood in the theory?
Well, position of the peaks is 1e-periodic. The asymmetry in the peak heights, that's a different story. I'm just referring to the position of the peaks. Because the position of the peaks corresponds to the position of these points.
Isn't the everything supposed to be 1e periodic? Because essentially what you're saying is I have a mode that allows me to add a Majorana no cost, and therefore it should be, everything should be exactly...
In theory, yes.
Okay.
But there are certain things that happen in experiment that are not accounted in simple theory. In principle, you are changing some parameter. And, I mean, I agree with you that there is some asymmetry, which I don't understand at the moment. But I'm not that surprised that I don't understand. So,
could it be that some matrix elements depend strongly on energy?
Matrix elements depend strongly on energy. Well, in the simple theory, they do not. I would say it's unlikely. But experimental system is very complicated, and we're just taking you know, what I want to emphasize, maybe that's worth emphasizing, that there are certain universal features and there are certain non-universal features. And the universal feature is that, you know, the position of these peaks has to be at 1e, because if you say that the ground state is degenerate, then we are adding and subtracting, you know, adding and subtracting electron to the same state, so they should be exactly 1e periodic. So that's a universal feature. Now the matrix elements at this point and how things hybridize, that's probably a non-universal feature. Okay, so so let's try to understand this data theoretically. Let's try to understand what happens in all of these three regimes. Okay, so once again, it's another snapshot where you have dependence now on the gate voltage as a function of magnetic field, and this is the color scale represents two terminal conductance through the structure. And so you see that in addition to actually changing the periodicity from zero and finite field, there's also changing the intensity, huge change in the intensity. So let's try to understand this change in the intensity as well as changing the periodicity. And we can classify this picture, this plot, into two different regimes. So this regime over here corresponds to the coherent Cooper pair transfer through the island. So basically, electrons tunnel by 2e's through the Andreev processes. And therefore, conductance, if you calculate the conductance in this limit, it's proportional to g squared because you have to transfer two electrons. Okay, but this answer is independent of the system length because you're coherently transmitting through the superconducting condensate. Now, in this regime where you have dark region, this regime corresponds to the sequential tunneling. So incoherent processes where you have electron tunneling to one end, then propagating through this island and tunneling out. And because this electron has to traverse the lengths L in time L over V, okay, so this L over V scale will enter. And it indeed enters because this little delta over here is the level spacing. So level spacing goes 1 over L. And so the longer is the system, sort of the smaller is the signal in this regime. Okay, because it takes infinitely long time for an electron to traverse through this wire. And then finally, in the third region, which is the, you know, theoretically we're considering Majorana region. In this region, even though the wire is very long, but there is a non-local Majorana mode, there is non-local fermionic mode consisting of two Majoranas that are hybridized. And because there is non-local fermionic mode, this non-local fermionic mode supports single electron coherent transmission through the superconducting island. And since this is a coherent process, the answer is independent on the system lengths. And therefore, we would, therefore, this little delta, which if you think about, you know, an electron which is in the excited state and has normalization, that's another language to understand the result, has normalization 1 over square root of L. Majorana in the bound state has normalization 1 over square root of coherence length. And because it's coherence length rather than L, you will find that there is a superconducting gap, which is 1 over coherence length rather than 1 over L. Okay, so this is the nature, how it comes in the final formula. But I would like to try to understand and explain this result a little bit more. Okay.
When temperature goes to zero? What?
No, this is finite temperature. This is like for typical temperatures of 50 millikelvin.
But eventually what happens?
Eventually I'll show you in the next slide what happens. So these are the formulas for different regimes. So so if you want zero temperature, then it's just a Lorentzian. okay, which is your detuning Lorentzian, and eventually becomes zero in the valleys. On resonant, it's actually proportional to E square of H, provided that you consider symmetric Gs. And then at finite temperature, well, you have to use this formula. Just average this Lorentzian with proper distribution function, and then you'll get. So basically the idea is, I skipped a little bit, but the idea is that, well, we start with this Hamiltonian. And then we say, well, I'm interested in all low energy physics. I'm interested in physics below the gap. Okay? When this level is at zero, and when its hybridization was, when the width of this level due to the coupling to the leads is small compared to the gap, I can do a projection to the low energy subspace, and then the problem reduces to essentially single particle problem. It's tunneling through resonant level. And so once we reduce the problem to tunneling through a resonant level, we know everything about this problem, and these are the answers. And these are the answers when the splitting between Majoranas, which I indicated here, was taken to be equal to zero. Now, if there is finite splitting between Majoranas, then these peaks will be shifted. And the shift will depend on the splitting, because now there is the orbital energy cost. Even in odd states, they actually have orbital contribution, which is non-zero. Okay, so because of that, you can try to see experimentally this shift of the orbital energy as a function of the different lengths of the wires. So this is experimental data. Here's experimental data of a much larger gate voltage. And so you see that in this sample, actually, you start from 2E and you go to 1E very quickly. So this intermediate regime was very, very narrow. And then you can just look at the statistics of these levels and average over many of them and try to see how the difference between even and odd positions in this spectrum depend on the system lengths. So you see that the splitting as a function of field correspond to some oscillatory function. So if you take the amplitude of this oscillatory function and try to study the amplitude as a function of L, system length, then you can find some data points. And here's the data points. And the point is a few data points, so just 5 data points, but they do fit on some exponential kind of slope. And experimentalists claim that they've measured this exponential splitting, which is another information characterizing Majorana zero modes. So so that's the best evidence we have in this experiment that, first of all, you have 1E periodicity at finite magnetic field. They checked that this 1E periodicity actually does not come from closing of the superconducting gap, because they can also probe the spectrum of the system at finite bias, and they see that the spectrum of the system at finite bias is such that exhibits some it looks similar to the spectrum of a system with a gap. Okay, and they also observed that the scaling with the system lengths is dependent on the lengths of the wire in this rather, you know, very strongly dependent on the lengths of the wires. So I think more experiments of this kind are needed to kind of seal the deal, but this is one of the first attempts to understand interplay of topological superconductivity and mesoscopic physics. So one of the things that I mentioned, that I didn't mention during this talk, but I think it's important to mention, is that if you look at the transport properties if you look at the height of these peaks on resonance, they are actually quite large. They're of the order of E squared over H. And now this is 2 terminal conductance. That means that each of the conductances in the setup are even closer to one. And therefore, the theory that I was trying to explain here, strictly speaking, does not apply to this regime, because this is strong coupling regime. So there is need to understand strong coupling regime. And
but this is conductance and resonance.
Yes, so conductance and resonance has a maximum.
It can be 2 squared over h and 0 temperature.
I'm not saying it's
very low T when it's resonant.
Yeah, but you can still estimate what's the, you know, this temperature only suppresses conductance, right? So it goes the other way.
Yeah, I misspoke. Say is that zero temperature, even at zero, at very low tunneling, you can still get 2 square over h conductance on resonance.
Right.
At finite temperature, yes, it will be suppressed.
Right.
Depending on temperature.
But how close you are to that value tells you about individual, you know, tunnel couplings. And so what I'm saying, the fact that you are, you know, of the order, well, you know, on these peaks, you're of the order. So this is g squared, right? So you take a square root, then you'll get, you know, g of the order of 1. And that means individual tunnel couplings are actually pretty large. And so the system is probably in the strong tunneling regime. And there is a need to understand this regime. That's all I am trying to say. Okay, so how do we understand strong tunneling regime? Okay, so that brings me to a second part of my talk, where I want to remind you about these papers from 20 years ago by Kostya Matveyev, and actually the second paper by Furusaki Matveyev, where they developed a strong tunneling approach in the case of a normal island. So the idea is that in this case, perturbation theory breaks down in tunneling, and so you want to actually non-perturbatively include the effects of the tunnel junction. And in that case, you would want to actually non-perturbatively take into account backscattering at the junction. So this is backscattering operator at the junction. I'm using a Bosonization approach. So this is just the Hamiltonian for the quantum, for semiconductor quantum dot. This is charging energy written in bosonic variables, and this is backscattering. And by doing various manipulations, they were able to calculate charging energy. And here's a summary. So in the normal case, indeed, the dependence of the ground state energy on gate voltage has certain non-analytic dependence. And this non-analytic dependence comes from the fact that one is mapping this problem to a two-channel Kondo problem. And in two-channel Kondo problem, we know that there is non-Fermi liquid description. Therefore, we would expect ground state energy to be non-analytic in various parameters. And you see explicitly this non-analyticity over here. So you see that log is blowing up. Well, you have also cosine squared, but some higher, some, for example, differential capacitance would exhibit some discontinuities. Okay, you also can estimate, extract effective charging energy when this reflection amplitude is small. And you see that when the reflection amplitude goes to zero, that the effective charging energy vanishing. And then, which kind of makes sense because the charge mode can slash back and forth without any resistance. So there is not even a way to define charging energy in this system. Well, if you consider spinless case, well, ground state energy has a simple dependence. Note that from just having parabolas, the charging energy now has a different dependence. It's just harmonic dependence, very simple dependence. And we can also understand effective charging energy. So what I want to do, I want to take this framework and try to understand what happens when we have superconductivity in the island. Rather than normal metal, we have a superconducting island. So what I will do, I will just add this pairing operator to this bosonic Hamiltonian in the nanowire, and this pairing corresponds to just S-wave pairing. Now, coming back to the question by Ivar, so you see the pairing operator cosine 2 phi sigma, it's relevant, so it fixes cosine phi sigma, and it also fixes cosine phi sigma at the boundary. Okay, therefore it reduces one of the degrees of freedom, and therefore the problem maps to the single channel condor rather than two channel condor. So that's another way to understand it. And in fact, if you do the calculation, and this calculation is very complicated, I'm not gonna just explain it, but you'll find that Q as a function of NG in this case is actually an analytic function. And the reason it's analytic because the problem now maps to single channel rather than two channel condom. Okay? So, and you can estimate the different, in different cases, the effective charging energy on this island. It really is a complicated function of various parameters, but I would like to just mention a couple of things which are, I think, interesting. So in the spinless case, it seems like effective charging energy is even smaller when superconducting gap is larger than EC, so it gets really suppressed. And that's, I think, is an interesting fact, because naively one would not expect that. So these are the answers for the strong tunneling regime. And now I will talk about transport. Unless there are some questions about thermodynamics and strong tunneling regime. I'm skipping the details because I don't think I can explain them in this talk. But if you are interested, we can I can discuss them on the board after the talk. Okay. So the last thing is the conductance. So that's a more difficult calculation, but nevertheless it can be done using the combination of RG, duality transformation, reformalization techniques, following the ideas outlined in this paper. And what is interesting result found in this paper is that conductance actually at low well, on resonance, so when gamma of NG is equal to say zero, is peaked at a half. So at high temperatures, conductance through a system is one. Then at temperature below charging energy, it gets reduced to a half plus some corrections. This a half is an interesting effect, and it happens because one of the modes that is coupled by the charging energy, which is pinned by the charging energy, essentially is removed from the expression for the conductance because it's pinned, and therefore conductance is reduced to a half. But what I will show you later, that once you include superconducting fluctuations, that this mode gets back, gets coupled to due to superconducting term, and that the half is restored. So that's an interesting consequence. So anyway, another thing that keep in mind, so this gamma is effective charging energy, that away from a resonant regime where gamma is large, actually, then at zero temperature, conductance would vanish. And that's why the title is Theory of a Strong Inelastic Cotunneling, because it is dependent on conductance. Now, let's see what happens in the superconducting case. So first, let me show you that the single particle calculation, which was valid in the perturbative limit, in the weak tunneling limit, is no longer valid here. Because, as I mentioned, this projection operation, where you just consider a single energy state at zero, is valid as long as the broadening of this level due to the coupling to the lead is much smaller than the gap. But when GR and GL are order one, then this broadening becomes order of the gap, and therefore this formalism just breaks down. So you need to do something else. And Well, this is what we do. Once again, we'll add this pairing term to the Hamiltonian, and we calculate. So, so first thing is that conductance on resonant is equal to 1. So from a half, we go back to 1. Because superconducting fluctuations, they couple to this mode that I said was decoupled before, but now it's actually a more complicated theory, and it comes back, so it gives another one-half contribution. And another thing that I want to stress out, that superconducting fluctuations fight charging energy. They do not commute. Superconducting term does not like to have a localized charge on the island. And therefore, it helps to in transport. So one can, you know, intuitively think about superconducting quantum charge fluctuations as analogous to thermal fluctuations in the previous case. And so rather than having T over gamma, here you'll have delta squared over gamma squared. And so if I look now at the curvature, at the signal conductance as a function of a gate voltage, this would we expect in the weak tunneling case, very sharp peak and almost zero in the valleys, and this is the roughly we have two asymptotics for a strong tunneling case. So it doesn't go to zero in the valleys, it's just proportional to this delta square over gamma square. Okay, so now that we understand the system very well, we understand thermodynamics, we understand transport properties, we can just look ahead and think about new interesting experiments or new interesting ideas that one could explore with these systems. So what are these ideas? Well, so far these experiments, they were probing fairly basic signatures of topological superconductors. But let me remind you that Majorana zero modes obey non-abelian braiding statistics, and therefore, there's a number of interesting experiments where you can probe fusion and braiding. And you know, these two ideas have been explained by Jason Alishia during the conference, so I'm not going to dwell on that, but I'd rather focus on two other experiments which I think are pretty cool. So, so one experiment that you can think about is so-called Majorana interferometer. So suppose rather than having just one wire as in Marcus's experiment, we now consider two wires, and we would like to measure interference. So there's current here, it splits, and then recombines over here. Well, it turns out that in this experiment, you would essentially probe four fermion Majorana parity of the system. So the signal will be proportional to the product gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3, gamma 4. And the fact that we can measure this product actually allows us to use some of these ideas for topological quantum computation, because that serves as an entangling gate, which entangles different topological qubits. I'm going to explain that in a second, but yeah, I think, you know, just by changing the gate voltages here and measuring different signal as a function of these different gate voltages and flux, it provides an important example for and future direction. And another experiment, and this is my favorite experiment, is this one where you can couple quantum dot, but rather than coupling to one Majorana mode, you just couple it to both of them. So we know that one cannot read out information encoded in topological phase by locally coupling to one of the Majorana modes. But this is not a local coupling, this is actually non-local coupling. And it turns out that such a non-local coupling actually knows about the fermion parity encoded in gamma 2 and gamma 3. So in order to see that, let's consider a very simple system. So let's consider, you know, this Hamiltonian. I already told you how to treat this Hamiltonian in the weak coupling limit. So I'm just going to follow the steps and show that, well, such a Hamiltonian will hybridize a state ns equal to 0, for example, in the island. So ns refers to the charge in the island, and nd refers to the charge of the quantum dot. So it will hybridize this state and the state where charge, when electron hopped on the island. And just by doing the calculation for the, using this Hamiltonian, you can find that there will be a second order correction to the energy, to the ground state energy of this Hamiltonian, which will now depend on the parity of this gamma 1, gamma 2. Okay? So the idea is that this island, the superconducting island, is in the Coulomb blockade regime. So the charge, on average, is almost the same. But there are short escapes to the, you know, some excited states. And these escapes to excited states, they know about parity of the Majorana. So the ground state is the same, but the excited states, they know about this difference. And because they know about this difference, if you do second order perturbation theory, you'll find that there will be difference in the ground state energy. So this operation actually enables one to do a braiding, which is based on measurement only. So these are ideas which were fairly abstract in the quantum Hall context, where you just do, and these ideas by my colleague, Parsa Bonderson, and Mike, and Chetan. And so so the idea is that, well, rather than doing braid operation by physically moving defects, you can do these braid operations by just doing the projective measurements. So now, suppose I define a projector, parity projector. This is projector for Majorana I and J to the fusion channel 0. So when you take two Majoranas, and you can think about them, when you fuse them or bring them closer together, enhance interaction, they can fuse to either empty or occupied state. So 0 is the empty state. And one can show that if you take four of such projectors and you do the measurements, so first, 3 and 4 Majoranas. So sorry, I didn't explain. So now I'm considering an island, superconducting island, which consists of 6 Majorana modes, so 3 wires. This is superconducting backbone, which couples these wires. And basically, the coupling is so strong that there is uniform system, and there is just overall charging energy in the system. So there is differential charging energy between these two wires because of this strong strong backbone, superconducting backbone. And now I'm just coupling semiconducting dots to different ends of such a Majorana island, we call it hexon, and doing the projective measurements, pairwise projective measurements. So if you do this algebra, then you can actually show that 4 of such projectors execute the braid. And therefore, system like this can be thought as topological qubit because we can do some quantum manipulations, quantum information processing already with such a system. And now, if we want to really dream big and look in the future, then we can consider piling up these hexons. So each of these hexon is now coupled through some semiconductor wires where you can control these barriers over here and control individual barriers. And then you basically create a scalable network of these hexons. So imagine I can measure charge on each of these islands just by coming out of plane, sending some sensor from out of plane. And then in addition to the single qubit operations, which I showed on the previous slide, this braiding is a single qubit operation, I can also do the entangling gates between different qubits by measuring now joint fermion parity of these four Majorana modes. And so these entangling operations combined with the single qubit operations, they are sufficient enough to generate complete set of Clifford gates in this system. So that's actually pretty cool, because this is the goal of this game, that we want to have protected Clifford operations. In this scheme, what is actually very important, that there is a charging energy on the island, and it's this large charging energy on the island is turned on all the time. Like in the previous proposals by us and et al. And previous Hired et al. Proposals, the charging energy was not turned on all the time. It was on and off, on and off. It was switching between charge and parity sectors. And during the time the system was in a fixed parity sector, extra electron could come in and could poison the state, and therefore could cause errors. So in this scheme, we don't allow, we try to exclude these processes where external electrons can come in and change the parity by keeping on superconducting islands, these Majorana islands, deeply in the Coulomb blockade regime, where charge is fixed and charge fluctuations are strongly suppressed. I think this is an advantage of this proposal over previous proposals, which I wanted to emphasize. Time is running up, so I'll just stop here and take questions.
Is this the most promising approach to creating
environments then, or? Well, I'm biased, but I would say if you want to think about long-term future, I would say that this proposal avoids several pitfalls. So one of them I mentioned, quasi-particle poisoning. So you don't want to have a situation where there is some external quasi-particles which can be generated by some, you know, not perfectly shielding the system or whatever from some, you know, high energy degrees of freedom, and then these external quasi-particles come in and poison. You want to avoid that. Another thing which I think is difficult to do experimentally is to create a controllable topological T-junction, because the alignment of the fields and the fact that you need to understand, and you need to understand microscopic details so well in order not to close any gaps in the system. So we deliberately took an approach where we like to avoid topological T-junction.
Roman, but your plot shows a topological...
Yeah, I know. You can...
12-leg junction or 18-leg junction.
Anton does agree with me, but I still think there is a merit to this.
But,
that it's not just about aligning the field. I agree with you that one can probably come up with some junction where you get out of aligning the field. But the fact that you need to know microscopic parameters...
As shown, you don't need to know the microscopic parameters of this large thing?
I need to know them once, and that's it.
And for calibration?
Probably more, because you're changing, so you're changing.
But here you're supposed to be gate controlling.
Okay, let's postpone this discussion. I want to make a second point, and maybe come back to this one. So so we avoided topological T-junction, and finally we also have electrostatic control here, so there is no Josephson junction involved. Well, it turns out that even though originally Josephson junctions were very useful because you can control fluxes, but the fact that we apply large magnetic fields in the plane makes them difficult to use, because small misalignment of screen or screen field of a superconductor creates extra fluxes around. And so it turns out that Josephson technology at large fields of the order of Tesla, is quite complicated. So in this design, we try to avoid that. The control is done electrostatically. Okay. And now we can argue with Anton about the T-junction. Yeah.
So just curious, what is Majorana physics in this qubit still? So can it be just reduced to a charge qubit already?
No. It's a charge qubit, but it has extra degeneracy. So you can think about charging energy as fixing basically a product of six Majorana modes. So So there is a global constraint on the product of gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3, gamma 4, gamma 5, gamma 6. But then we reduced the Hilbert space to a smaller Hilbert space, right? But there is still degeneracy. And this degeneracy is robust. In fact, all the original ideas for topological quantum computation, these ideas had encodings where you have at least 4 Majorana modes. Now here we have 6 Majorana modes, but one can also do computation with 4 Majorana modes. So 4 or larger. And that's because it's not an accidental degeneracy, but it's actually guaranteed degeneracy once you have topological phase. So it's not just simple superconducting charge qubit. It's some other qubit. It's Majorana qubit.
But during a readout, there's a superposition of charge in two states.
Well, okay. So, yes, there is. So when you are reading out the information, you want to lower the barrier so that there are quantum fluctuations between the island and the quantum dot. And the idea is that the charge on the quantum dot will be different for two different ground states. So just the, you know, you're measuring average charge. Use SET, for example, to measure average charge on the island. And this average charge will be dependent on the fact on two outcomes, whether there is parity plus one or minus one. So in some sense, you're using conventional readout to read out topological information, but I explained to you why this is allowed. It doesn't contradict this, any other dogmas of topological phases of matter. It's non-local coupling. You define the device, which you see, you know, that this, if I forget about this semiconductor, then going from one Majorana to the other Majorana takes a large distance. So that's exponentially, so this splitting over here is exponentially small. But when I turn on the barriers, then the splitting is increased on demand. So that's why, that's how things work. And you on demand fuse them.
This still just gives you the Clifford circuits.
You have to add stuff, but you know, the usual game, pi over 8 gate. We have some ideas how to generate these pi over 8 gates. So I think this actually is a beginning. Even from the quantum information perspective, there are different algorithms. And you can weight these proposals in terms of feasibility and experimental simplicity, in terms of computational complexity, and in terms of physical parameters. So there are several axes with which you can gate. And we have 6 different proposals using different layouts. I just showed you one of them. And so there is an interesting computer science problem to understand, you know, computational complexity in these systems. There is also experimental problem to figure out what's the winning, you know, the best proposal, because you, for example, I don't know, maybe these backbones are difficult to make for some reason or something like that. So, but right now these are open questions.
Any more questions? Yeah, so let's start going again.